Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you, friends. Hey, thanks for listening in this week. As always, yeah, in a post-Mardi Gras 2019 world, here we are. Hope everyone had a good carnival here in New Orleans or wherever you were. We took the week off last week from doing the show because, yeah, it was right there on Lundy Gras when we do the radio broadcast. I had a good one. And again, I hope you all did. What does it mean when we're in a post-Mardi Gras world? Well, what it means, friends, is we are now here into festival season here in New Orleans. That's right. No rest for the wicked. Of course not. We don't do it that way around these parts. Yeah, so festival season's really kind of in full tilt now. As we speak, it is Agave Week going on, New Orleans Agave Week, which will lead up to Top Taco, weather permitting, on Thursday there along the river at Waldenburg Park. And we're doing some coverage of that event, Agave Week, as we speak. I'm moderating some of the panels that are happening. And yeah, it's been a lot of good fun. And hopefully we'll have a show come out of that. That'll probably air next week. At least that's the plan. Tape some interviews and some things like that with some of the people that have participated on the panels along with me. Still a chance to go get out there and do some of the stuff connected to Agave Week. Go to NOLAAgaveWeek.com to check that out. And you can check out TopTacoNOLA.com for the event on Thursday. Good show coming up for you here today, friends. Also related to festival season, once a year we like to do our French Quarter Fest preview. And as you know, we've been talking a lot about French Quarter Fest. It's my very favorite music festival on the planet, and I mean that. And we've been doing our French Quarter Fest series, which I believe you know, where we've been interviewing local musicians, because that's who plays the fest, all local musicians that participate in the fest when we talk about food and drink and culture and, of course, their music and so on and so forth. So that's our ongoing series that will continue to be an ongoing series even after French Quarter Fest is over. But French Quarter Fest is coming up April 11th through the 14th. And I can't wait. And what we do, we've done this, I guess, the past couple years now. This will be the third year, if I'm not mistaken. We do our French Quarter Fest preview, and we head over to their offices right there in the French Quarter. And we go preview some of the food, meet with some of the food and drink vendors that are going to be out there, because it's a great food and drink festival, by the way. And we talk with some folks from the team from French Quarter Festivals Incorporated and so on and so forth. So to that end, on this week's show, we chat with Rebecca Sell, who is their marketing and communications director. And we talk about the festival. We talk about its economic impact, which is huge on the city, kind of how the festival works. It's a 36th annual festival, just some particulars about it and some general stuff about it. And then we're going to do a couple segments where we talk with some of the food vendors who are going to be out there, some interesting stuff we have there. And then in our podcast only portion of the podcast is always out by Wednesday of the week that the show airs. So if you're listening on the radio Monday evening, presumably, unless you're hearing the repeat on Friday evenings, the podcast will be out on the Wednesday in between. Hope that makes sense to everybody out there. But we always do a podcast only section called Another Shot with NOLA Drinks, as a lot of you probably know. And I highly recommend you check that out on this Another Shot with NOLA Drinks. We have Rebecca Sell continue to join us from French Quarter Festivals Incorporated, and Ann Maloney, who is one of the food writers for NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune newspaper, joins us. She was there at the preview looking at some of the food stuff, and Ann kind of parachuted in, which was great, and we get some of her thoughts on the festival, not only the food stuff, but just the festival in general. Really nice to have Ann on as well. You can get the podcast of the NOLA Drinks Show. Easiest way is to just go to NOLADrinks.com. And you can find links to all your favorite platforms. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn Radio. There's a couple others. Nitty Grits Media, which is part of the National Food and Beverage Foundation. Oh, yeah. Find it anywhere you want. But the easiest place, NOLADrinks.com. Got the links, got the player. You can download it. You can stream it. You can go subscribe to it however you want to, friends. Hey, what we're going to do is we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drinks Show, and then we're going to bounce back with all of our featured interview stuff, our French Quarter Fest 2019 preview. Come on back.
Oyster rake scraping down Grand Highway.
We say Le Bon Temps Brûlée. Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. Yeah, from the city that shares a deep connection to bourbon and knows how to throw a party, comes the third annual New Orleans Bourbon Festival from March 20th through the 23rd. Discover over 150 bourbons and American whiskeys, as well as great food at the Grand Tasting. Check out more than 30 seminars led by industry luminaries, special distiller dinners, and much more. The event is brought to you by Beam Suntory, Four Roses, Brown-Forman, Uncle Nearest, Bourbon Plus, and the Hilton Riverside. More info and tickets at nobourbonfest.com. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in. Yep, it's our French Quarter Festival preview. We are here at the worldwide headquarters of French Quarter Festivals Incorporated. I am very pleased to be joined by my first guest and my friend, Rebecca Sell, who is the Marketing and Communications Director for the festival. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
As always, thanks for coming on. And it's always, this is always a fun day, right, Rebecca? Because what we're going to do, we're going to talk to some food vendors and some things like that. And so it's our preview episode, and when you know it's a world-class music festival, and we'll get to there in a second, but our other friend and your colleague Heather Twitchell, who is the food and beverage director, is really working hard to not only make this, as I said, a world-class music festival, but also a world-class food and drink festival.
Absolutely, and I think that word is starting to get out.
Yeah.
We have a lot of interest, of course, in the music, but more and more people are talking about the food, and we've now weighted the culinary lineup with the music lineup, and we actually hold it back and don't reveal it right away because it's just generating a lot of buzz and excitement and anticipation.
That's really cool, and it's all local restaurants.
Yeah.
And how many? Do you know how many restaurants that there
around
are?
Around 60.
Okay.
Well, it's a combination. Most restaurants, but then, of course, we work with Abita, and they have some booths out there in Brown-Forman, but it's around 60 food and beverage booths.
And all local stuff, and they're out there pretty much the entire festival, right?
They are. Yeah. At the Mint, we are only open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but everyone else is out there all 4 days.
Yeah.
And they're part of our family.
Yeah, that's really
cool.
They're
with us throughout the journey.
And it is a journey, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So, I mean, people are hearing this. We're actually recording this on Ash Wednesday. So if you hear a lilt of lethargy in my voice, it would be because it's the day after Mardi Gras. But this is airing next week. So we're about a month out from the festival when folks are listening to this.
Yeah, 35 days. Today I did a countdown.
Right. Right. And this is so when you guys are really ramping everything. I'm assuming there's a whole lot. I know the musical lineup's been announced already, and you've already got all your food vendors lined up and that sort of thing. But now is sort of, I guess, where the rubber hits the road, right? Are you just kind of pulling all the parts together?
Yeah, now we're really starting to move into production mode. We're a team of nine.
Yeah,
So we really, it truly is an around-the-clock effort at this point. And we plan all year. But usually after Mardi Gras, then it's like, okay, now we're moving into production. So we're actually going to start loading in or building the festival in 3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's a big setup, right? I mean, there's 23, how many stages this year?
23 stages.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's spread from Canal Street to Esplanade.
Now, is there a new stage?
There is a new stage. It's the Pan American Life stage at the Moonwalk. So they just renovated the Moonwalk and created that beautiful plaza. So we are building a stage over the steps that go down into the river. So the music will literally be on the Mississippi River.
That's really cool. And for folks who don't know, if you're listening outside the area or if you haven't heard of the Moonwalk before, it's straight across from Jackson Square. Between Jackson Square and the river. So it's very picturesque, and it's very centrally located.
And this just happened. We are going to have a wine bar in Washington Artillery Park. So one can go from Jackson Square, the Hilton stage, which has world-class entertainment all 4 days, to the wine bar, have a glass or bottle of wine, and look out onto the Moonwalk or into Jackson Square to hear the great music.
Oh, so that's cool. So you'll actually be able to see the stage from the park? Or?
Well, you might have to walk up with your glass of wine to the viewing platform, but yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty exciting. And I know that when I make the walk from Jackson Square to the river, I get thirsty.
Exactly.
So
it's
having a wine bar.
It's across the street. We now have a wine bar.
It's designed perfectly just for me. That's fantastic. Oh, I didn't know that was happening. So that's really
it just happened.
An exciting development. Oh, okay, cool. Nice. So let's talk a little bit about the festival, Rebecca. We mentioned it's the 36th annual. Started out in Jackson Square and a couple stages on Bourbon and Royal, right?
Just a few stages, yeah.
And featured such, we've talked about this on the show before, but featured MC work by Ed McMahon. Had some break dancing, right? Some flash dancing, I think, some stuff like that.
We've evolved.
And we're going to kind of we wanted to paint a picture about where we all started and where we are now. And probably by most estimates that I read, maybe was attended by a few hundred people. Right?
Yeah.
Something around there. So now let's fast forward to the, you know, what was just the 35th anniversary last year coming into the 36th. Now we start to talk about numbers about 750,000 people, roughly.
Yes. Last year, it was so sad. I don't know if the listeners remember, but we had to cancel one day.
We had terrible
weather on Saturday, and it was a safety issue. It's our biggest day. But even canceling that biggest day, we estimated attendance at around 500,000.
That's amazing.
It's a mix of locals and visitors. It started as just the Locals Fest, and now it's split 50-50.
So that's your estimate, is that it's about 50% local and about 50% visitor?
And we can qualify that. We work with the University of New Orleans, and they do economic impact studies and surveys for us. So they help us, with a combination of our clicking at the entry points, and we also do a flyover where we take pictures just to make sure that the mass on the ground matches what we're seeing. But we have a formula, and we calculate the attendance that way.
It's pretty interesting, because you just touched on this, doing the studies that you do with UNO and such, that the economic impact on the city is important. And we're going to be doing a show, I mentioned this to you before going on the air, Rebecca, that we're going to be doing a show coming up on the festival economy in New Orleans. We have about 130, give or take, festivals here in town. French Quarter Fest is certainly one of the biggest. It's become something that is an international draw. Can you give us some idea of what the economic impact in recent years has been?
Yeah, and let's use 2017, because 2018,
losing
we were
that
down
day.
Just losing
sure.
that day. But it's an average of 200 million. Even last year, losing a day, it was around 190 million. It's usually just above 200 million. And we're a nonprofit, so our mission is to drive economic activity in the city, as well as showcasing culture and heritage. So it's very much that economic impact is very important to us and tied to our success, what we measure as success.
And that's really important. And I think, you know, going further down that road, and for people who don't know, as you described, there are 23 stages this year, basically peppered throughout the French Quarter and a couple environs, technically maybe not in the French Quarter, but right adjacent to, right? Don't need to nitpick here. And so it's free. And, you know, aside from buying food and drink, of course, and stuff like that. So people are kind of meandering through the streets. This drives a lot of business to the local businesses in the neighborhood.
Right. So you mentioned the restaurants. We work with all local restaurants and chefs, because of course we want to boost their business, but we don't have any kind of an arts or crafts market, because we want people to spend their money in the neighborhood shops.
Mm-hmm.
So we're constantly approached by different vendors, and it's like, no, thank you. That's just not part of our mission. We want people to spend their money in the quarter. And then there are the musicians. We hire, there are around 300 acts, and we know that translates to around 1,700 local musicians. All of them are paid.
Everybody's paid.
And so that money stays in the community.
That's really important, too. And I want to emphasize that point, because I think lots of times, and certainly not you guys and other major music festivals, I think that happen here, people have learned, when they give musicians this explanation, it's going to be good exposure for you. And that's not what drives the economy. And you know this, Rebecca, we've done some shows on this recently, talking about the economy of New Orleans is based on tourism, and that economy, that tourism segment, is based largely on the music industry and the hospitality industry. So in my view, what you all do with French Quarter Festival is it's actually driving those two industries or pushing, you know, economic benefits to those two industries. And that is the lifeblood of the city's economy.
Yeah. And what's really cool is that, because we're a nonprofit, we link musicians to local businesses. So we have the musician sponsorship program. Mm. And we try to help them. We pay all the musicians regardless, but we try to match musicians with local businesses, small business owners who want to get involved and contribute or support. And they also, they help pay for the acts that are performing on stage. So it truly becomes a community effort to make this happen.
Absolutely. You know, since you just mentioned this too, because I think this is fascinating. People are like, free festival. Well, when you have 23 stages, this isn't just paying the musicians and having them plug in their amps. There's stage managers, there's crews, there's security, there's the stages themselves, the infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, our costs, I can't go into all of the costs, but there are so many hidden costs that people don't even realize. They just take for granted, but it certainly doesn't just happen. And we have to pay for everything, and we pay for our permits, and we pay for our NOPD, and yes, the stages and the infrastructure. So it's quite expensive to produce in the neighborhood, but again, thanks to our sponsors, Chevron has come in as our presenting sponsor. Beta Beer is another major sponsor. Thanks to these sponsorships, we're able to keep the music free.
And that's a really important part of this. And I've had conversations, Rebecca, with people before who haven't thought it through like you just elaborated. Well, they'll say, well, there's a lot of people. All they need to do, it's a free festival, just add more stages. And I don't think people realize that, one, there's just sort of a physical limitation right in the neighborhood. But two, it's a lot of – every stage represents a lot of resource, a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of human power.
Exactly. It's an asset.
So, there you go. That's a great way to put it. So what are some things that we're looking forward to at the festival this year? We mentioned the wine bar and mm-hmm. some of the things with the food and beverage program. And we're going to, as I mentioned, talk to some of the food and beverage vendors coming up here in the next couple segments. But we've got some debut acts, I think. Lots of debut acts.
Yeah, we have, I think it's over 40, which is a record. And the reason for that is because last year when we had to cancel on Saturday, we were really committed to paying all the musicians and also rebooking those musicians this year.
Okay.
So any of the debuts from last year's Saturday were rebooked this year. So it really helped boost our number because we're always trying to keep it fresh. So we've got record number of debuts and also a record number of headliners. We recognize that the river can get very congested, and the Chevron stage, which is located at the Bienville statue on mm-hmm. Decatur Street, has traditionally been a Cajun Zydeco destination, very popular stage.
Yep.
But this year we decided to look at the programming and see if we could pull some of those headliners off of the river and put them on that stage just to pull people into the streets of the quarter.
Okay.
So we have George Porter Jr., Flo Tribe, John Cleary, Rockin' Doopsie on that Chevron stage, which traditionally, it's been just Cajun Zydeco in the evening. And we saw the Cajun Zydeco during the day, so dancers still come out.
Stage.
That's still happening at that Chevron stage.
Gotcha.
But at night, we're featuring more headliners in the streets of the quarter instead of all of them on the riverfront.
Gotcha. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And let me ask you, this is a really weird procedural question, but I was just looking at the poster for this year outside, and I was looking how you kind of list people, and you just mentioned that there's a record number of headliners. How do you kind of like, how do you decide that? There's got to be a little politics in that, right? Or at least, you don't have to give us all the machinations, but how does that work?
We can fit around 40 acts. Well, that's new. Okay. And you notice we have a different model. We've never done a lineup poster because it's been impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've usually just featured one artist on our promo poster. And this year we decided to spread it out a little bit. And of course, Corey Henry and Chief Juan Pardo are featured in the art. But we had to narrow it down to 40 bands.
Okay.
And it was very difficult to do, and a lot of thought went into it. And I'm sure some people were omitted that should not have been, but gosh, when you have limited real estate and you've got over 200 acts.
Sure. There's no wrong answer, right, with that. I think it's kind of like when you look at all-star games in sports where who deserves to.
Yeah,
there's
what are you gonna
plenty
do?
Of people deserve, right?
Yeah.
That it's very interesting. I think, and I was looking, because one of the headliners that you have listed is Galactic, who's a great band.
Yeah, they are great.
Love
band.
Those guys. And this is their debut, right?
This is their debut as well.
Which kind of surprised me. I know I'd never seen it.
Yeah, we were surprised
as well.
We had to go through the files and fact check that, but yeah, indeed, they are one of our headliners and one of our debuts.
Yeah, that's cool. Good. Yeah. Great Irma Thomas, I know, is one of the headliners.
Yeah, and Irma also is one of our honorary co-chairs at our gala.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and she's a big supporter of the festival in general, and turns out for a lot of the, like, the PR stuff, right?
Yeah, and she's been in our commercial before and does a lot of interviews for us, and we're always happy to have Miss Irma represent us.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Rebecca, do me a favor. We're going to take a little break here in just a second, but tell people where they can find more information about the festival itself, and also too, because French Quarter Festivals Incorporated doesn't just put on French Quarter Fest, that's the big one, but you do Satchmo Fest in the summer, and you do all the holiday stuff in December. So tell people, you know, like where they can find information on your programming throughout the year.
Well, for programming throughout the year, go to fqfi.org. And from there, you can link to French Quarter Festival, Satchmo Summerfest, or Christmas New Orleans style. Mm-hmm. You can also go to FrenchQuarterFest.org if you're looking for the music or the food schedule for this event specifically.
Yeah, and you have a cool grid, right, where people can see what bands are on what stage.
Cubes will be revealed on March 22nd.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So we know who's playing what day, but we don't know exactly what time and what stage.
Yeah.
Because we need a second reveal. So
that's coming.
March 22nd. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, what we're going to do, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we're going to chat with a couple different sets of the food vendors talking about the delicious vittles they will be serving up at the festival, and then we're going to do a little bit of a podcast-only segment, too. I think Rebecca's going to stick around for that, and we're going to go from there. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
I'm going to take you out.
Hey friends, Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. Agave Week is back with its new headquarters at the Ace Hotel in downtown New Orleans. Week-long events kick off Sunday, March 10th with tequila and mezcal tastings, seminars, panel discussions, and one-of-a-kind parties. Visit NOLAAgaveWeek.com for tickets and info. The Grand Tasting is the third annual Top Taco with unlimited gourmet tacos and cocktails from some of the best restaurants in the city. It's happening at Waldenburg Park Thursday, March 14th from 7 to 10 p.m. For tickets and info, visit TopTacoNOLA.com. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in to the show this week. Yep, friends, as you know, we are here with our French Quarter Festival preview. French Quarter Festival, my favorite music festival in the whole world, coming up April 11th through the 14th. And, we're going to focus a little bit here on some food and drink stuff, because not only is it a world-class music festival, it is a world-class food and drink festival. And to that end, I'm going to welcome my next three guests. First, Ralph Pausina from Creole Cuisines Concepts. Did I get that? I get them out of order sometimes,
Ralph. It's a big name. Creole Cuisine Restaurant Concepts.
Creole Cuisine Restaurant Concepts. Okay, got it. There you go. Who operates several venues. How you doing, man?
Terrific.
Good to see you again. We did this last year.
Yes, sir.
There you go. And also joined by Twee and Locke from Sweet Handcraft out there in Metairie. How y'all doing?
Doing good, Brian.
We're doing good.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with you guys. So this is the first time participating in the French Quarter Festival, is that right, as a vendor?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about what y'all do.
We're a local ice cream shop. We do everything in-house. We do our own ice cream. We have specialty cookies. We have we also make specialty macaron ice cream sandwiches. We do macarons in-house also. We also serve ice cream with donuts and ice cream with bubble waffles. We have a little different thing. It's a little sweet little shop to come enjoy, you know, day off.
Yeah, so I'm gathering we're talking about desserts, right?
Right.
Delicious desserts. How did y'all get into doing this? What got you into the world of desserts?
It started as a hobby. I was a nurse and was selling it to, you know, my fellow my nurse friends. And so it became a hobby. And then I decided, you know what, I'm going to take a break. And then let's start something, you know, do something else.
Now, did you have a background in cooking before? Or
No.
Neither of us had.
Neither.
Okay. You just like desserts.
And yeah.
I started doing that. Right on. Well, cool. Well, Ralph, you are a veteran of the French Quarter Festival as far as your company goes, and you guys operate various spots, and you're back this year. How many times have you guys been?
I've done it three times already, and I think we've done it as a company many years before that.
Okay. So which spots are you guys, the company in general has how many spots? You guys, because you have daiquiri shops, you have casual, you have finer dining, right?
I think we have 28 locations.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you do the casual stuff?
Casual division, yes. And we have 11 locations.
Okay. So which ones are going to be out at the festival this time around?
So at the festival this year, we have Royal House, Flamingo Agogo, and Cafe Maspero.
Okay. So, and Flamingo Agogo is the newest one of the group that you just mentioned, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And well, tell us a little bit about what you all are, what are you going to be doing? What are the three spots?
So Flamingo A Go-Go is going to do a shrimp a go-go. It's crispy shrimp and a red pepper aioli tossed with grilled pineapple and a mango salsa.
Okay.
And then we're going to do a fried turkey Cuban. So we're replacing the roast pork with fried turkey and everything else in the traditional Cuban with garlic French fries.
Okay.
And that was such a hit last year, we were also selling the garlic French fries as a side.
As a side. Mm-hmm. Now, is this stuff that's normally on the menu?
It is.
Ralph? Okay. And what about Maspero and Royal House?
Cafe Maspero, we're doing white beans with fried catfish and rice. We're doing pasta jambalaya with shrimp, chicken, and sausage. And we're doing beignet fries, little sticks of beignet dough with chocolate and caramel syrup and powdered sugar.
Got to have the powdered sugar.
Yeah. And Royal House is doing char-grilled oysters. And we're also doing a fried catfish beignet. So it's a tempura-dipped catfish fillet strip that's got a crystal hot sauce butter and powdered sugar and a little cane syrup drizzled over the top.
That sounds pretty good. Now, Royal House has been doing the char-grilled oysters for a while, right, at the festival?
Yes, every year, as long as I can remember, and probably before me.
Probably before that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Lock and Tweet, so you guys mentioned a little bit about what you do at the restaurant. Do you guys know what you're going to be doing out at the festival, what you're going to be serving up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to be doing a hot glazed donut with cold ice cream inside.
Okay.
We're going to have two different flavors, which is almond brittle and cookie monster. So, you know.
What's cookie monster?
Cookie monster is your regular vanilla base.
Okay.
But we put Oreos in our in-house baked cookies, so that's what makes it special.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, it's a hot donut with cold ice cream inside.
Inside, yes.
How do we make that work?
So we have a presser. So then what it does is we take a glazed donut, we cut it in half, and okay. we put the ice cream inside. We press it, and then you're going to get a hot glazed donut with cold ice cream.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. That we also have macaron ice cream sandwiches also.
Now, tell people what that is, just so they know.
Macaron ice cream sandwiches?
Yeah.
I'm going to let my wife take over.
Okay.
So
Tweet, tell us about it.
A macaron ice cream sandwiches is it's a macaron shells that's made of egg and almond flour. And you know how it comes in like a little dainty little cookies, but
yeah.
These are ginormous.
Okay.
And they're not stuffed with buttercream, but they're stuffed with ice cream. So it's going to be, we're going to have four different flavors. We're going to have Banana Foster's, Vietnamese coffee, a cookie monster, and then also a Fruity Pebble.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's an ice cream form.
Now, have you guys done festivals before?
No, this will be our first one.
Okay, so you got some planning to do, I'm going to guess,
yes.
Right, as far as being able to keep... Because you got to keep stuff cold, obviously,
right.
Which is
yeah.
a challenge.
We won't have a lot of big equipments out there.
Okay, right. Yeah, and you got to let the festival know how all the things, like all the way down to the microamp level, right, of what kind of power you need. So you're going to be bringing some freezers out then, obviously, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. And
definitely.
Yeah.
We're going to have several deep freezers.
Deep freezers and display freezers and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. Do you know where you all are going to be as far as what location?
I think we're in the main area, which is the Palm Lawn. Is that it?
The riverfront.
Right. On the riverfront, in Baltimore Park somewhere. Okay, gotcha. Cool.
Yeah.
Ralph, what about you guys? Where are the three spots going to be? Do you know?
Cafe Maspero is going to be very near the ferry by Canal Street, by the aquarium, up by the entrance of the aquarium.
Yep.
Royal House is going to be in the Jack's parking lot. And Flamingo Go-Go is going to be out on the Kohlmeyer lawn.
Okay, where's the Kohlmeyer lawn?
It's the first patch of grassy area next to the aquarium.
Oh, gotcha. I didn't know that's what that was called. Okay, very cool. Ralph, we got about 2 minutes left. You guys, 3 minutes left. Tell people, what does it mean for the company to participate in the French Quarter Festival?
Well, it's a way to get our name out there and let people try some of the good food that we serve at the restaurants and hopefully it will entice them to... come back and eat it again the next day or twice that day or at least come to our restaurants and then walk around with it and maybe somebody else will see it and they can tell them how good it was and they'll come eat it also.
Sure. But what I'm asking though, like as far as the importance of the festival, and I mean, I get it from the marketing perspective, but like just philosophically, what does it mean to participate in French Quarter
Festival? It's just great to get out there in the community and, you know, this is not a fundraising event or anything like that, but it's you get to meet people and get a pulse of the neighborhood, and it's a great draw for tourism, you know, to bring people into our city. Just, we have so many wonderful events that happen throughout the year, and this has turned into one of the biggest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a great overall draw for the city, and you know, in general, regardless of who the participants are.
Yeah, for sure. Lock and Tweet, what about you all? Since it's your first time, going to be special, I'm guessing. And how does it make you feel to participate in French Quarter Fest?
I think that growing up, being born and raised in New Orleans and being able to participate in something this grand is special to us, because not only that it gives our name out, but it gives us a chance to be with the community, which is New Orleans, to celebrate what we do best is have fun, eat and drink, and just be with each other. That's what I think about.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I like that. It's exciting. And it's going to be busy. I'm going to have a lot of people.
Yeah.
You're going to serve thousands and thousands and thousands of desserts.
Hopefully, yes.
I think you will. So tell us, we got about a minute left, y'all, before we have to close the segment. Where can we find the restaurant online, and what's the street address?
You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We do not have a website at this moment.
Okay.
We are located on 3363 Severn Avenue in Metairie.
Yep.
Yeah, and then so we're in a parking strip, a storefront.
Gotcha. And so sweet handcraft, but with a K instead of the C in handcraft. And I'm like, K, where would that go? And say, when you said that a lot, I said, I'm like, it's Ash Wednesday when we're taping this, friend. So yeah, that's the way it goes. Ralph, what about Maspero Royal House and Flamingo Go-Go?
Cafe Maspero is at 601 Decatur on the corner of Toulouse and Decatur. Flamingo Go-Go is 869 Magazine Street, Magazine in St. Joseph. And Royal House is 441 Royal Street on the corner of Royal and St. Louis.
Okay, and cool. What about websites and all that stuff?
The website is creolecuisine.com.
Creole Cuisine. That's easier to say than the full company name.
Yes. And each restaurant also has its own website with their name.com.
And then you can find that link from the company's website,
and there's
right?
links from the main website.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, y'all, for being here, and good luck at the
Thanks
festival.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show. Come on back. Hey friends, Brian Diaz here with the NOAA Drink Show. Agave Week is back with its new headquarters at the Ace Hotel in downtown New Orleans. Week-long events kick off Sunday, March 10th with tequila and mezcal tastings, seminars, panel discussions, and one-of-a-kind parties. Visit NOLAAgaveWeek.com for tickets and info. The Grand Tasting is the third annual Top Taco with unlimited gourmet tacos and cocktails from some of the best restaurants in the city. It's happening at Waldenburg Park Thursday, March 14th from 7 to 10 p.m. For tickets and info, visit TopTacoNOLA.com. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We're doing our French Quarter Festival preview episode. We do this pretty much every year, and joined by another couple fantastic food vendors who are participating in the festival. Michael Levie from Causes over there in Harahan. How you doing, Michael?
Doing great today. Thank you.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks for joining us. First time you've been on the show with us. And Loretta Harrison from Loretta's Authentic Pauline's. How are you doing, Loretta?
I'm just fine.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, fantastic. Great to have you. It's the first time you've been on as well. Loretta, tell us a little bit about Loretta's Authentic Pauline's.
Okay, Loretta's Authentic Pauline's is the first black candy company in the city's history.
Wow, I didn't know that. Oh, cool.
Yes.
Okay.
We have two stores. One is in the French Market. The other store is located in the Marigny.
Okay, where's the one in the Marigny then?
At 2101 North Rampart.
Oh, okay. Got it. I knew about the one, you know, in the market, but I had no idea that you had one in the Marigny as well.
Well, the store in the Marigny is a restaurant front, so you can go in and sit down and eat, chill, and just enjoy.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. That's cool. And tell us a little bit about, I mean, people know what pralines are if you're listening from this part of the world, but people listen to the podcast from outside this part of the world. Will you tell people what a praline is just so they know?
Okay, a praline is a New Orleans candy that's made with sugar, butter, pecans, and milk.
Mm-hmm.
Praline is a candy that has a French origin. It was first made in France, so then it came to Louisiana. And the only difference we substituted was they use almonds.
Okay, right.
And we use pecans because it's so plentiful in the region.
Yeah, and I think that makes for a nice touch too.
Oh, delicious, delicious.
And you mentioned the four ingredients, but it's one of those things that's not as simple as it sounds to make them right, is it?
No, it's not, because everybody.
I know I can't do it.
Everybody in New Orleans say, "I can make pralines. I can make pralines." Uh-huh. Well, everybody, you can make something, but at funny. Loretta's, we make the authentic pralines.
Got it. There we go. I like that, Michael. What about you guys over there at Causes? What's tell us about the spot?
Causes is a restaurant. It was started by Gary Grunig. he's been in Harahan since Katrina, 14 years ago, and he was in Gentilly for about 40 years before that. And so we do family-style cooking, family meals, and you know, roast beef, poor boy, poor boys, and plate lunches and dinner.
So you do like a lot of poor boys. You do burgers and that kind of thing, awesome.
Yes, and then for the festival, we do Debris cheese fries. We do something, crawfish boil fries, which is just taking all the ingredients that's typically in a crawfish boil. The fry is the new potato. And, you know, so it's a way of being able to eat crawfish at a festival fairly without having to take a shower.
Yeah, take a shower after, right, exactly. covered in juice.
Last year, for the first year, we did a traditional hamburger, which, you know, I think is... You know, with all the foods out there, but people love a hamburger, and they, you know, we sold more hamburgers than I thought was possible.
You know, a hamburger is always one of those choices where you're going, I think I want this, and then it's like a default choice, right?
Right.
Oh, I'm going to have the hamburger. Mm-hmm. Just kind of go that way.
Right.
Well, so this is the second year that you guys, or how many years have you been doing the festival?
We've been doing the festival for about 5 years.
Okay.
This will be our sixth year.
What about you, Loretta?
Six.
Okay.
6 years. But we started when the festival first... Under, I think it was Sandra Daughters.
Okay.
Way back
37 years ago or so. Yeah,
way back then.
Okay.
But this year for us, we're doing our praline beignets.
Okay.
Wow. Our praline candies, the original chocolate, rum, and coconut. We're doing our crab meat beignet, which has taken off. Wow. We're doing our praline choux-sole. Which is the oldest pastry in the city's history.
Is that then?
Shoe sole.
Yeah,
it looks like the sole of a shoe.
Okay.
It's rolled in praline candy, cinnamon, sugar, and pecans, and it's baked off. It's rolled in puff pastry dough.
Oh.
So we do that.
Okay.
We do
terrific.
Pecan pies and our famous, infamous praline cupcake.
Okay.
Yes.
So now, like, with the cupcake and the beignet, the praline cupcake and the praline beignet, are we going to find, like, a praline inside the beignet and inside the cupcake, or bits of praline, or is that
it's
how that
filled.
Works?
It's filled.
Okay.
They're filled with the combination of praline and one of my most favorite cream cheese blend.
Oh, okay. That's mm-hmm. nice.
I may be spending more time at her booth than
right.
I'm just current free.
That's always one of the challenges, isn't it, Michael? Because you like look around and you go, man, there's so much good food, and it's like there's only 4 days. I got to watch my figure as it is already, my European figure, and there's absolutely no way. Well, so we got about 4 or so minutes left. Tell us, Michael, from your perspective, what does it mean to be a vendor at the French Quarter Festival and be a participant these past few years?
You know, I've enjoyed it from, you know, I think it's. Like people seeing the different groups. I think it's a diverse crowd, which I absolutely love. I think it's a way that everybody, and it seems as if everybody gets along at French Quarter Fest, and I just enjoy that.
That's great.
So
it brings out locals and so many tourists now that come to the...
Yes.
It used to be very local, right? And now it's very tourist-oriented as well.
Yes, it
is. What about you, Loretta? What does it mean to participate?
Well, it's just like Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras is over. But it's just like when you ride on the float and you are the center of attention and people waving at you. But at the festival, this booth that you're in, people are lined up to get some of the stuff that you make. So it's like you're one of the food rock stars.
There you go. I like it. Where's your booth going to be, speaking of booths?
It's on Kohlmeyer.
Okay,
the river.
So the river. I didn't actually know that patch of grass over there was called Kohlmeyer. And now I know specifically where that patch of grass is.
So we're on the river.
Gotcha. Yes, that's a good place to be. A lot of foot traffic up there. What about you guys with causes, Michael?
Same Kohlmeyer lawn. I think we're closer to the entrance on the riverfront as opposed to last year where we were right behind the stage.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I think I'm still digesting where exactly we are.
Yeah, and Do you have a preference one way or the other? I mean, I'm not trying to get anybody in trouble here or anything, but does it kind of matter? Or does
it matters. Being on Kohlmeier's lawn has always been very successful.
Okay.
I guess the other is just how easy it is to get in and out of or load in. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of the pack this year, so it will be trickier to get when you have to reload.
Yeah. So do you have to, like, cart stuff in then mm-hmm, to get up there on
absolutely.
The river? Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're just the folks that were on before are doing desserts, ice cream, though, oriented stuff, and they're bringing lots of heavy deep freezers, apparently.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're on Kohlmeier as well, so I'm thinking that will be challenging.
No, yeah. I love my location.
Have you been in the same one each time the past
yes.
few years? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, good.
So you got to dial it in then.
I love it. Don't move me. I just love. I want to stay now. Are you hearing this?
they will listen. So they'll hear it. Well, do me a favor, Loretta. We got about a minute left. So tell people where the address is again of the two establishments, and then where we can find you online and all that.
The first in the Farmers Market, 1100 North Peters. Mm-hmm. The second location is in the Marinese, a restaurant you can come and sit down and enjoy. That's at 2101 North Rampart on the corner of Frenchman.
Cool. Do you guys ship too and stuff like that? Can people buy?
We ship all over the world.
I had a feeling. Yes. I think I saw a sign somewhere. So where do they find you online?
www.lorettaspralines.com, LAP@lorettaspralines.com.
Perfect.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Are you on Facebook and Instagram and all that
Facebook,
stuff too?
Facebook, all of that, and then
and
some.
All that, and then some. Okay, cool. What about y'all, Michael?
We're located at 6215 Wilson in Harahan, and www.coscooks.com.
Perfect. Thanks, you two, so much for being here, Loretta, Michael.
Thank you.
I really appreciate
it. Okay, guys, come out.
Hey, come out and see him. Come out and see Michael. Come out and see Loretta.
Listen, old taste and see. Come on out.
There it is. Hey, friends, we're going to sign off the portion here for the radio part of the show. Stick around for another Shot with Noel Drinks on Podcast Zone. We're going to talk a little bit more about French Quarter Festival. So remember, be kind to one another. Until then, use your turn signal. And cheers, y'all. Everybody, yep. Thanks for sticking around for another Shot with Noel Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you as always. Hope you are enjoying our conversations here with the gang at French Quarter Fest. Yep, and we're going to be continuing that conversation in just a second. Rebecca Sell is going to join us again, and local food and wine writer Ann Maloney from the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com is going to drop by and talk a little bit about her thoughts on the festival, not only the food stuff, but also just the importance of the festival itself. Then after that, I'll be back with my parting shot. Here we go. All right, everybody, yep, another Shot with Noel Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. As always, thanks for listening in, friends. This week, we are doing our French Quarter Festival preview, as you know. And from our first segment that we did, For the preview, Rebecca Sell, who is the Marketing and Communications Director for French Quarter Festivals, is stuck around. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And pleased to be joined by another guest, Ann Maloney, who is the food writer for the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. Ann, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
That's great. You know, and Ann, you and I met actually at this event, this sort of food preview event last year, and we talked about having you on the show, kind of going down the road here, and then we had your colleague Todd Price on a few weeks ago, but it's good to get you on. It was a year in the making.
Yeah, it was. And we're back for another delicious look at what's coming up.
Yeah, which is very, very exciting. And so it's cool to pull you in on the interview to kind of get your impressions. Something we talked about with Rebecca at the top of the show was not only is this a world-class music festival, this is now really becoming a world-class food and drink festival. Would you agree with that?
I really do. I think it's expanded dramatically, and there's been a real effort to keep it fresh. You know, there's classic dishes here like Walker's cochon de lait po' boy, which is fantastic.
Right.
You got to have that. But then they have some new things coming in, new restaurants coming in. Risuto's? I never had their food before. I just got to taste it today. It was really good.
You and I had a bite of the shrimp pasta.
Yeah, that was
really
good.
That was pretty
wild. Yeah. It leaves a little tingle on your tongue, which is nice. So I love that. I love them. You know, so when you have a festival, it's annual. It's just nice to have something fresh and new to look for.
Yeah.
Food-wise, and they do that.
That's really, and so how long have you been covering the festival, Ann?
Well, I've been a food writer for 3 years, but I was a Lanyap editor for 10 years before that, so
okay.
13 years.
So you've been able to see some of the changes that have taken place and how they go about keeping it fresh.
Yeah, and expanding. It feels like it's expanded quite a bit food-wise.
Yeah, is it definitely.
Additional drinks, right?
Yeah.
And additional food booths, food areas.
Yeah, and we've tried, just like we try to keep the music lineup fresh, we try, it's exactly something that we're trying to do with the food lineup. And we have vendors that return year after year, but if someone decides that they want to get out, we always are trying to look for new restaurants like Risuto's. And I was just telling Brian, I don't think you're aware of this, Anne, but we are adding a wine cafe, a wine bar that's going to be directly across from Jackson Square that just happened.
Nice.
So always looking for new ways to freshen it up.
I was very excited about that, Ann, because I get thirsty walking from Jackson Square to the river, and so now there's a watering hole right in the middle.
Well, if you're thirsty, you might want to get some bubbly, but anyway.
There you go. It's a perfect thing
to
do.
But that'll be fun, you know, because sometimes you want a glass of white wine with, like, a crab cake from Landry Seafood. Yeah. That would be delightful together. Yeah.
There you go. What are some of the things, Ann, that you mentioned, like Walker's being the classic example of the cochon de lait po' boy, and then we were talking about Risuto's. Anything else catch your eye today that you saw?
The Landry Seafood items look really, really good. It's a crab cake that looks like it's mostly crab cake, which to me is, that's what it's got to be, or I don't want it. And they also have a crab, shrimp, and lobster bisque that looks amazing.
Oh, okay.
So I saw that today. I didn't get to taste either of those, but just very eye-appealing. New Orleans School of Cooking is doing a fun thing where they're doing a waffle sandwich with the chicken inside and the slaw, so you can walk around and eat it. And everybody likes portable food because that just makes it easier, especially if it, God forbid, should rain or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just easier to tuck that under your umbrella and eat it. But then there are lots of things that, you know, I know G.W. Finn's is going to do something wonderful. Are they bringing back that amazing dessert that they had?
I hope so. That Sunday.
Yeah. Oh,
what
that,
did they do? I didn't catch that.
It's the caramel, the salty, malty. Oh,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And that to me is one of the things I have to go look and make sure. I'm pretty sure it's on there.
It's on there.
I hope I'm not leading people
down
the
road.
That's
usually my Saturday afternoon snack.
Yeah. That's one of those things where, you know, you have certain festivals where you go for something. That's become a thing I go for here because it's so good.
I'm going to have to try that. What I'm thinking about right now, too, is the Stuffed Seafood Mirliton by Two Jacks.
Oh,
because that's amazing also.
And the brisket.
And the brisket. Yeah.
When they tried to not have the brisket a couple of years and, like, the
they
city
realized
revolted
they need, yeah,
and
they
it was
to come back
marching
the
in the street. Yeah.
It's been on the menu since the place opened in 1856,
so
right?
Good.
You
got to
serve it at the festival.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. That's one of my favorite. I think I'm, you know, significantly keeping it on the menu there. Not that it needs my help, but fantastic. Well, and you mentioned something, Ann, I think is an important point. We are talking about festival food here, and I guess I'll throw this to you, Rebecca, because I tend to spill on myself quite a bit. And so, but being able to be portable is actually really important in all of this, because there's not a huge opportunity to be able to sit down somewhere and eat, like at a table. There's bits, but you need to be upright.
Well, and we evaluate every food vendor, if they're bringing a new item in, our committee meets, and several of the team members, we try the food and we interview them, and portability is one of the questions. We talk about how is somebody going to travel with this once they leave your booth. And we will ask for modifications if we don't feel that it's something that somebody can eat walking through the festival. We do have now some cafes with a few tables, but absolutely needs to be something that somebody can hold and eat and walk.
That's it. So if you don't mind sharing, what are some, do you guys sort of like score the criteria? And what
we
are
do.
Some of the other?
We do. Bits? We want to know, first, of course, the taste.
Okay.
And we want to know that it's not going to be too filling, because we try to keep the price of every food item low enough that you can try several things. We want people to treat the festival like a buffet. So we don't want somebody to come and give a platter, because then it's going to fill everybody's tummy up and they're not going to be able to try anything else. So mm-hmm. we want to make sure that that works, that it's portable, that the presentation, that it's beautiful. So there are all types of all sorts of criteria. And we talk about it, and we will ask people to modify the recipes or their presentation a bit. And usually everyone is very open to working with us, and we always find items that are winners.
Yeah, very. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And I've asked the food vendors this question in the previous two segments. We had a couple different sets of the vendors on. And I always like to ask the folks that participate, both musicians that we do with our French Quarter Fest series. We'll talk about that in a second, Rebecca. But asking the food vendors, you know, what it means to participate in the French Quarter Festival, sort of from a philosophical standpoint. From your perspective as a food writer, what does the festival mean to you? I mean, there's obviously good food. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But kind of what's your impression of it? Why does it matter to you?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's free.
Yep.
And so it's a very democratic festival. There is nothing keeping you out other than you not wanting to come. You know, I mean, people have other reasons, but there's nothing barring you, no ticket price barring you. And it's a chance to see New Orleans musicians showcased in a way that sometimes they're not, how can I say that diplomatically? Sometimes they're not quite the headliners, as mm-hmm. they are here.
Right.
And I like that. I like that. And very often there's a chance to get a little bite of something I love, either that I know or don't know, something new, and then to see a musician I love or to see a musician I've heard of but hadn't seen yet. And I can roam from place to place, get a little taste. Oh, I've heard of this musician, I've heard of this woman, I've heard of this man who sings or plays this instrument, and I can test it and taste it. And that's mm-hmm. what I love. I love it. And I also love the fact that it's in a living neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so I can stroll, if I get like, oh, the crowd, I can stroll off. I can go into a bar or a restaurant, sit down for a while if it's hot, if it's cold, if it's raining, whatever the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that. I love the freedom of to be able to come and go. And I think it really represents a lot of what is delicious and wonderful about New Orleans. And that it's free.
And that's great. That's a really good point. All that well said. Rebecca, just really quickly, because I just mentioned it, so I don't want to leave it off the table here. So we've been doing a series here on the show called the French Quarter Festival Series, where we've been pulling in local musicians that are participants, mm-hmm. performers in the festival. So I want to thank you for doing that. But I think it's really important, stuff that Ann just mentioned and having musicians on, people have a singular passion, I should say, or a deep passion for the festival and being involved in it, don't they?
We are, well, I mentioned earlier, we are a true community event. These food vendors and musicians are part of our family. We're a small team that puts it on, and we're constantly leaning on one another and supporting one another. And there's a lot of love over 36 years and relationships that have developed that are very deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. Well, Ann, do me a favor, you guys. We're going to close this portion out here of the podcast. And tell people where they can find your writing online and all that good stuff and in the paper.
Oh, you can find me on NOLA.com. And in the Times-Picayune. And one of the places that I'm, if you want to talk to me, is on our Where Nola Eats Facebook group.
Yep.
If you go find that and come in there and ask me a question or ask Todd a question or just talk to that great group of people that's in there. It's like 47,000 people in that group. It's a great group. I love it.
Yeah, you know, I thank you for mentioning that, because I actually just became a part of it not all that long ago. And it's really fun to see who chimes in, mm-hmm. and like lots of times you guys will throw an idea out there, which I think is really cool. And then there's some really interesting responses, because it's people that are just enthusiasts. But then there's also a lot of people in the business that have some very thoughtful mm-hmm. responses. It's a very interactive group.
It's a lot of fun. I love it.
That's great. And you do have to ask for permission to be in, but if I got in, the bar's got to be pretty low. So I'm sure anybody out there listening, they'll let
the
in.
The only thing you have to do to be in the group is behave yourself and be nice.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Rebecca, one more time, tell people where they can find out more about French Quarter Festival and FQFI.
You can go to FQFI.org to learn about all our events, or FrenchQuarterFest.org to read about this year's festival.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Ann, thanks for coming on. We'll do it again.
Happy to be here.
Thanks, Brian.
Rebecca, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Friends, we're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening in to the show again this week. As always, friends, a quick programming note. Next week, going to have a great show for you. We recorded this at Agave Week, which just wrapped up. And we're going to be talking Mezcal, one of my very favorite subjects, not only because I love the juice, but I love the cultural importance of it. And I don't necessarily love the problems that the industry is facing, but it is important to talk about, and I do love talking about it. It's environmentally sensitive, the agave world. It's culturally sensitive, the traditional way of producing it. The result is magic in a bottle, in my view. But there are some serious issues facing that, and we get into quite a bit of that stuff on next week's show. We're going to be chatting with Brandon McCullers of Noble Coyote Mezcal, Evan Meeker of Del Maguey Mezcal, and Phil Minasali, who is a local spirits broker who has El Bujo Mezcal. All three gentlemen are very, very passionate about the spirit itself, but also very, very passionate about trying to do things the right way, the best that they can, in supporting the local economies and the local families and the local environment, which allow us all to enjoy Mezcal. So I hope you tune in for that one. Also related to Agave Week, a quick note here, Top Taco, which was meant to happen this week, sort of the grand tasting that culminates from Agave Week, has been postponed due to bad weather. Now it looks like the weather is not going to turn out as bad as was feared, but too late to go back on that. Festivals are tricky things, friends. They made the right call. There was a potential for heavy rain, potential for damaging wind, and even potential for electrical storms, which could have proven dangerous to the attendees, the vendors, and everybody else involved with the festival. I know it's really, really tough to have to do something like that, but kudos to them for making the right decision. Here's the good news. Postponed from March 14th to May 16th. So Top Taco is still going to happen, friends. We'll be out there judging cocktails and all that good stuff. Somewhat related to festivals, because we just talked about one of our very favorite festivals all this entire episode, the French Quarter Festival, of course, and something that Rebecca said, Rebecca Sell, the marketing and communications director, that I wanted to highlight here and sort of use it as a springboard moving forward on this little parting shot as we do. Rebecca said that they estimate 1,700 or so musicians are employed by the festival every year. They get paid. This is something that we talk a lot about on the show, and you've heard me talk about it before, too, is that, you know, the tourism economy is the backbone of the New Orleans economy, and said tourism economy basically depends on in large part on the musical industry and the hospitality industry here in this city. We all know that, but just want to remind everybody of that because it matters here. Rebecca noted that last year on the Saturday, which is the biggest day of the four-day festival, it runs from a Thursday through a Sunday, so you can imagine Saturday is the big day. It was a total washout. They had to make the tough decision of canceling it due to safety and other reasons as well, just like Top Taco did. But here's the important thing that Rebecca said, if you didn't catch it, or if you did, just to highlight it. All the musicians who didn't get to play that day still got paid, and moreover, they tried to give priority to those musicians to rebook them for this year. Cool stuff. Now, they do try, French Quarter Fest does try and find sponsors for the stages. I think they have a sponsor for all 23 or so stages out there. Probably not too hard of a sell to get that. But they also try to find sponsors for each and every act on those stages. And I do know from just simple observation that not every musician on all the small stages, every time slot, has an actual sponsor. If they do not, they still get paid. French Quarter Fest is a nonprofit. I think it's a great idea to go out and try and find sponsors. Helps them offset the cost and the expense of running a stage, which is not cheap. They pay the stage managers. All the equipment's rented. All that kind of stuff. Security. There's a huge amount of cost that goes into running each and every one of those stages. And it's great. You get a sponsor. The sponsor gets some exposure. They feel good about it. All the right way to go about it. But again, if there isn't a sponsor for that particular act, the musicians and everybody else still gets paid. Now, recently I was talking with a friend of mine who works in the service industry, but is also a very talented musician who plays in a noted local brass band. And kind of in an indirect way, which I'll spare you, we got on the subject of quote unquote good exposure. Now, what do I mean by that? A lot of times people will approach folks, especially musicians, but even people in the service industry, and even this show, actually, friends, they'll say, hey, you know, if you come do our private event or you come play at this particular place, you know, at like a for-profit thing, a private thing, a corporate thing, it'll be good exposure. What they're saying is that they're not going to pay you, or they're going to lowball what they're trying to pay you. Same thing happens to friends of mine that are bartenders. Oh, come work our private event. It'll be good. You'll meet some other rich people. Maybe they'll hire you to come work their party. I get hit up, just as a side note, all the time. People want to have their brands promoted for free on the show. I am
I do have, you know, we don't make money on the show, to be honest with you, but we do have production costs and other things that that are paramount here. I've got to cover expenses to actually run the show and equipment and production costs and fees and compensation for the people that help us put the show together and everything else. So anyway, let's put that aside. It's the good exposure argument, which is complete BS. Now, I think we know that here in New Orleans, it's a very cultural city. Our tourism, our economy, our identity largely rests on these cultural components. This happens in a lot of places. It's not unique here. It's unique the way it goes down here, specifically, like it is anywhere. But the overall phenomenon is common all over the planet. There is a value to these cultural resources. There is a value to the people that keep it in the fore, that spend a lifetime trying to build a career, try and make a living from doing it. They're doing two things. They're trying to make a living, and they're also trying to continue to promote it and keep it alive. One thing I also want to note, however, is that many of the people in the music and hospitality community are already very supportive and generous with their time and their talents when it comes to supporting worthy causes and efforts. I know all kinds of musicians who play charitable events for free. I know all kinds of people in the service industry who donate their bartending and serving and cooking skills and everything else, event organization skills, to support worthy causes. They do it because it's the right thing to do. And hey, if that turns out to be good exposure because some rich patron of a particular organization comes to the party and says, hey, you're a killer bartender, I want to hire you to do my holiday party, then that's a win-win for everybody, right? People are already giving of their time and their talents already. So if we're not talking about the charitable causes and that sort of thing, and even a lot of charitable causes, like we're talking about French Quarter Festival and some of these big budget places, they have money because they know even if they pay these people, they're going to be able to turn around and make more money that actually goes to the charity. So I don't want to say all charitable causes you should play for free and all private things you should charge for. I'm saying you kind of got to look at this on a case-by-case basis. But where I'm going with this is when people tell you in some of these instances here that it's going to be good exposure, it's almost always BS. Now, something just came across my desk, and I'm going to try and work it in here just because I just saw it a few moments ago. But Airbnb, the super big company, we know who they are. Not going to talk about cultural displacement with the way Airbnbs work and have what's been going on here in New Orleans and all that stuff. But they're trying to organize something called an Experiences Festival. Now, a local musician from another brass band actually shared this, was contacted by someone with Airbnb. Airbnb out of New York, who is not particularly forthcoming about really what they were trying to do, and certainly not forthcoming with what their budget was. So this took place over multiple email exchanges. This person was trying to hire the brass band to play, quote unquote, Airbnb Experiences Festival. So after not getting a lot of answers, this musician basically came back and quoted her festival pricing. Person came back from New York and said, our budget is X number of dollars, which was not told before and much lower than what a festival budget would be. He knew what he was doing. He figured, no way, I'll quote festival pricing. This will end the conversation. Well, then the person basically came out and said what they were looking to pay, and they were looking to pay money less per musician than what they would make at a wedding second line or even at a weekly club gig. This is Airbnb. What they were trying to do is have this event that was going to be a quote unquote festival where they brought together Airbnb owners to this party and encourage them to turn around and have their own Airbnb experiences to enhance their offerings, like classes or have performances, I guess, at their Airbnb or whatever we're talking about. Who even knows if these things are licensed or what? Whole other set of issues. But this is all speculation on his part, but I tend to agree. Can't imagine that they wouldn't use the imagery of these people, their efforts and all that stuff in their marketing materials, pictures, makes it look like they're sanctioning all this stuff. They're sanctioning Airbnb. They're, you know, partners in the cause with what Airbnb does, and, you know, basically going to exploit their images for pennies of what they should be getting paid, especially for a corporate gig or quote unquote a festival gig. It is quite a bit here. What we're talking about is that you have this company come in and they try and lowball people, and then they're going to turn around and try and squeeze every drop of cultural value, which basically translates in this case in New Orleans and elsewhere, into marketing value as they possibly can. Now, I guess if you're planning an event, I suppose it's okay to ask somebody to play for free or work there for free because it's quote unquote good exposure. I think you need to ask yourself some questions before you ask that. And you better be okay when you hear a no. Don't be disingenuous. Don't be dishonest. If you're trying not to pay, then just be upfront about it and let the person make a decision. And if they don't want to, respect the decision and maybe reevaluate what it is that you're doing and what it is that you're asking for. Now, I will say this, probably, hypothetically, a lot of musicians would play French Quarter Festival for free. It draws, when weather's good and all days happen, it draws about 750,000 people, as you know, something we talked about on the show this week. But that's not the point. They don't ask. They pay their musicians. They understand that the festival is about promoting local culture, including music, and understanding the value of that culture, and understanding that the people that carry on the tradition of the value of that culture need to be compensated for their efforts. It's how they make a living. Now, remember, friends, that this festival here, French Quarter Fest, is free for us to attend. One of the cool things about it, as we noted, is it's in the neighborhood of the French Quarter, of course, obviously. You can duck into your favorite restaurant. You can duck into your favorite bar. You can go shop at some of the shops and all that stuff. It's one of my favorite things to be able to do during the festival. And that's part of their mission. Rebecca mentioned that supporting the local economy, economic development in the area is part of what they're out to do. But remember also, there are vendors out there. Yes, they are. Food vendors are all local restaurants. So you are supporting the local economy and local restaurants when you're out there. So, hey, duck into a bar and grab a cocktail. When you're out at the festival, I just ask, go support a food booth or two. Go buy a drink at least once or twice during the festival at one of the drink vendors. Go buy a CD or two or six from some of the local musicians that are out there selling CDs, which they're allowed to do around the stage when they play. That's what supports the local economy and the culture in a meaningful way. So please go do that when you're out there at French Quarter Festival. And again, if you're having an event and you want entertainment, you want talent, and you have a budget to pay, just pay people and pay people what they're worth, because we know exposure, that's kind of a BS thing anyway, isn't it? This is how folks make a living. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you. I'll be saying, all these emails we'll try.